Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the podcast, the YouTube channel, or iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're finding us. And I have with here a very special guest. This is episode 160 of the Davidson Hang podcast with Carrie Rattle, who I met through the Financial Therapy Association website. And yeah, I find what you do really interesting. You're a financial therapist, a coach, a compulsive shopping coach, and you're the CEO and founder of Behavioral Sense, and you've also created a division of Behavioral Sense around how to stop over shopping. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Davidson. This is going to be fun. Looking forward to talking with you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely find what you guys are doing fascinating. As someone who has been around a lot of coaches, I love how you specialize in something that is really, you know, really relevant, living and have, when I worked, I lived in Murray Hill and I was not too far away from Fifth Ave and, you know, in New York City, you see all these nice, you know, fancy stores that have all these like really strong brands and, you know, being in the epicenter of it all, like it really is hard to escape, trying to fit in, trying to keep up with the Joneses. So I'm really curious, to learn more about, you know, what made you, I know your background is you've been executive in banking and, you know, you've been in the corporate world and have had a lot of success there. And it sounds like, you know, now you've transitioned into helping and serving a lot of your clients.
So I kind of, you know, I fell into this role, Davidson. As you mentioned, you know, I've been in banking and I was on Wall Street. And so every day I would see people behave with their money in certain ways. And I would hear people talk about their money, whether it was in banking, you know, their checking accounts, their mortgages, or investing. And I started years ago sort of analyzing and looking for patterns and things like this about who these people were, you know, and how they lived their lives. So yeah. I had great fun, and I really wish this whole designation had existed 30 years ago, because I would have been doing this the whole time. It's so much fun. But yeah, you know, it became a natural for me to become a financial coach, and I focus on professional women and couples. And then I bought a second business during COVID in 2020. And that was, you know, managing compulsive shoppers and helping them. So yeah, here I am today, and no looking back.
That's amazing. Yeah. As, growing up pretty poor most of my life, like living off of government assistance and food stamps and stuff like that, like money was always something that I've thought about. I mean, everyone thinks about money, right? But I would say I felt like a more intimate relationship to it. Just a lot of the scarcity growing up, and, you know, my parents never owned a home or anything like that. So I felt like money was like all I thought about, like every day, you know? And as I've grown and made more money, I was like, like I'm still thinking about money just as much as when I was poor. Now I'm just making more money, but now I'm trying to keep up with my friends and get bigger, you know, as they buy houses, as they buy, you know, different handbags and stuff like that. It's like I see, you know, my wife sees her friends buy like, you know, Chanel, and she's like, oh, like I wish I can own a Chanel bag. You know, now the goal is to own a Chanel bag, right? It's just something that it's hard to escape when you're working and living in New York City.
it's tough. And so, you know, there are a lot of things going on there, and we can sort of talk about some of these in detail specifically. But what's interesting is that you and anyone, not just you specifically, but we grow up and start learning how to think about money and start seeing behaviors in our parents, in our community, our mentors, easily when we're 2 years old, right? You can be sitting in a living room playing with building blocks, and you're hearing stuff that you're starting to digest. And so if you grow up where there is scarcity or money is survival or something like that, if your parents show it outwardly or speak it, then you learn to think in that kind of same money cycle, right? So if your parents may have been thinking about money, when is the next payment coming in so that we can eat and pay utilities and that kind of thing. But you have learned that same thought pattern. So for you, even though you have more money coming in and you're more comfortable, you've been taught to think that way.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? I mean, my parents got a divorce because of money, right? Like that my dad was a job, he, you know, being a traditional like Asian male, I think in Asian societies, like there's more of that, like the masculine is supposed to take care of the family and provide and be the breadwinner. When he stopped becoming the breadwinner, I think my mom lost respect for him and then they divorced, you know. So yeah, I would say it certainly has had like a huge impact on money, and you know, I think every couple argues about money, right? But I would say for me, because of that foundation, like it's hard to not talk about money with my wife, and you know what it means about you know, am I providing for her? Like all her friends are getting all these nice bags. Like, does that mean I should do the same? Right. It's like one of those things that we all have to go through, I think, in our society.
Well, it's tricky too because what you're referring to is that money is a symbol, right? So for your parents, money was a symbol of your father's ability, right? And yes, there are so many cultures that think that, and there's pressure on men. And I challenge you as a couple to think about what providing for really means, right? You know, safety, love, support. You've got a roof over your head, that kind of thing. Does the Chanel purse mean you are no longer a wonderful husband if you can't buy a Chanel purse, right? Yeah, and we can get into this, but I want people to stop looking at the facade and start understanding what might be behind that Chanel purse that doesn't look so pretty.
Yeah, I mean it's tough, right? Like I think I have some of my wife's friends work on Wall Street, and you know, I would say are doing quite well, right? And you know, my in-laws have a business in fashion, so they made their whole living in fashion, right? So it's there's a lot of like complexities and nuances that would make it a little bit harder. But yeah, you know, when you hear, you know, your spouse or whoever, I hear comments all the time where, you know, and sometimes it's very passive. It's like, oh wow, like she has such a nice bag, or like, oh, you know, like yeah, you know, her husband buys her like all these nice like designer like outfits. Like it's hard for me to not think about it and compare myself, like, oh, am I not doing a good job, right? But I do think yes, like in terms of like security and safety and love, like I provide ton of that, you know. I don't think anyone can beat, you know, if we're comparing, right? I do think I provide a lot of that. But when you hear constant comments, like it seems like every month, like, oh wow, like she just went to Paris and, you know, they bought five bags, and it's like, it's hard for me not to think like, oh, okay, like, you know what I mean? So I think there's, you know, I can conceptualize it and think, okay, well, it's more important that I'm, you know, I'm faithful and like I'm, you know, I'm caring and I listen and I validate her. But it is hard when you're seeing all your friends that, you know, a lot of my friends are doctors, and of course they live a certain lifestyle, right? So it is extremely difficult to like not compare yourself.
So you just said something interesting, and I'm going to offer two tips to kind of help you not compare so much. But you know that there has been a study on millionaires twice now, the millionaire next door and the next millionaire next door. And in top millionaires in terms of status, doctors are hardly even there.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we talked about this before, right? So doctors make a lot of money. Doctors are not good at managing their money. So do not assume, and I work with couples on Wall Street, right? Just because they know, they may have a wonderful expertise around money, how to invest or how to trade or something like that, right? But when it comes to managing their own money behaviors and their own money psychology, they're coming to me for a reason, because they may each make $1 million a year and they're not saving anything. So here are two tips for you and your viewers. One is, I want you to be cynical about social media.
Yeah.
Because, keeping up with the Joneses used to be next door, then it became the neighborhood. Now it's global, right? Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And here's what I refer to social media as: reality rehearsed and the American dream materialized.
Yeah.
So what I want you to do is look at those postings and be cynical, because it's a snapshot. It's a one moment in time when someone has rehearsed their position, has rehearsed their outfit, has
Yeah.
positioned themselves to convey something that may only be a moment in time and is not their real life. Right? And we judge ourselves because we look at our whole life. And so we know so much more, but we just compare ourselves to that one snapshot. So get more cynical about social media and what you see. And then this one is more about you and your friends. I want you to change your visual. And here's what I mean by that. A lot of people will walk by a big home and say, oh, they must be rich, right? Big home, manicured, new cars in the driveway. The cars might be 1 or 2 years old. Okay, so now I want you to peel back a layer. So behind that million-dollar home is an $800,000 mortgage. Behind that are a bunch of credit cards that get paid off on the minimum balance every month, but don't totally get paid off. And the cars sitting in the driveway are leased. So they're not assets. You don't own them. You're just, whoever you're looking at, they're just borrowing them and renting them on a monthly basis. So when you look at all this, you see a successful facade. Behind that, they're only worth $200,000 in terms of their million-dollar house minus an $800,000 mortgage. They have debt on credit cards. They don't own any cars, and they may or may not even have retirement assets. So now, what do you think about how successful those people are?
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I think, we used to compare yourself to, and I'm not gonna lie, I live in a pretty wealthy neighborhood, so I think it makes that even harder because, you see everyone driving all these like Maseratis and like, you know what I mean? So I think, yeah, I love what you said. So I luckily have deleted like Instagram and Facebook and like a lot of Snapchat, TikTok off my phone. And I'm not gonna lie, like I feel so much happier since I've done that,
Yeah.
But even like even in my own neighborhood, right? Like people have like the latest cars and it does, like, funny enough, like my neighbor just saw our new car, like our new Tesla, and he was asking all sorts of questions. He's like, oh, like, a lot of my friends that were huge BMW fans are like all switched over to Tesla, and he was asking me all these questions. And I did get that dopamine hit of like, oh yeah, like it's a really cool car, like I'm helping save the environment, blah blah blah. But yeah, I think our society, social media is, like maybe 10% good, where it's like, oh, I get to see, congratulations on your baby boy, and like it's good
Yeah.
to, but I would say 90% of the time it's like not good, where I'm just like, oh man, like this person, like I feel like they travel so much, and I thought I travel a lot, but I guess not as much as some of my friends, it's very detrimental, I think.
Well, and all those new cars, did they buy them or did they lease them? If you lease them, you're only paying per month, and you don't have any asset. And guess what the most popular brand of car is for millionaires across the country?
Is it Toyota?
That's second.
Oh,
So good
like
guess.
I'm guessing it's one of the normal cars, not a luxury car.
Ford.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So a lot of millionaires, live within their means, which is so important to understand. And that means paying your credit cards off every month. That means owning stuff and paying down the debt, So Ford, then Toyota, and then BMW is third. And so, I herald Tesla as a great car because, yeah, you are contributing to the environment. And I'm sure because there is so much intrinsic value behind doing that, that may become one of the more popular cars, but not yet. Good old Ford is owned by more millionaires out there than any
Wow.
other brand.
That's wild. Yeah, that's certainly eye-opening, right? Because yeah, you're right. Like I do see some of my extravagant friends and you know, and honestly, like I can tell, like you can tell if someone's like happy inside, you know, and
Yes.
even externally, like they tell me, they're like, hey, like I live in Silicon Valley, like I'm not happy, you know, like I'm working 80 hours a week and I still feel like I still can't keep up, you know. And you know, on the outside, like they might seem like they live cool lives because they're traveling, they're doing, you know, these nice like Palm Beach vacations and stuff. But then you sit down and you know, you have a chat with them and they're just like, yeah, honestly, like I'm not happy, you know, like
Yeah.
I wish life was more simpler back then when we were just like you know, living more normal lives, you know. So it just makes you think like, wow, like what's the reality like versus what's the polished exterior that I'm showing everyone.
Yeah, and working tons of hours to make money, to spend on things that aren't necessarily what you value, but you know that someone else will value. So you're spending your life hours. We all have limited life hours. We are all going to die someday, right? Spending all those hours making money to impress other people, many of whom you don't even know. They're just on social media and you just want them to like. Is that how you want to live your life? Just a question.
Yeah, I love how financial therapy seems like it's a growing business as well, right? It's something that, like you said, I wish I knew 20 years ago or 10 years ago, or you know, I mean that it would have been beneficial even at the age of 12, right? Because you know, that's when I was comparing, you know, when my friends, you know, I lived in a like government, it's just like you know, a place that was like mostly low income housing, and my friends had like houses and beach houses and stuff, and it was, you know, it definitely messed with my confidence because I would
Yeah.
compare and I'd be like, oh wow, like my friends, like parents are lawyers and doctors and you know, like they're executives and like, you know, like we can't even like I can't even ask for a new pair of shoes, you know. So it definitely hurt my confidence. I feel like this would
Yes.
be beneficial even earlier as a teenager.
Absolutely. You know, it's hard when you are assessed externally by what you have or what you do, as opposed to internally by who you are as a human being and what you can offer and share with the world.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think our society does value, you know, some of those things, right? Like, you know, we look at like doctors and executives as like heroes, right? Like they're almost like idolized, like almost, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like at some point I thought of like Elon Musk and Bill Gates as like heroes, like even more so than God, you know, like I would say like they were like my God, you know? So I do think our, especially in America, we envy those 80-hour like executives like Jeff Bezos and you know, we look up to them like you know, everything they say, people follow like every word that they say, you know.
Well, you know, and there's a guy in there we sometimes forget about who was top of the heap for years and years. This dude called Warren Buffett. You know, and Warren Buffett has lived in his same simple two-story home for decades. And his integrity is solid. His values are solid and grounded. And there's a man who has been incredibly successful, but also started a movement to leave much of his fortune behind to charities as opposed to just passing on to his kids. You know, so there's a lot of old wealth that doesn't show itself. It's new wealth that feels compelled to show itself. And Buffett is older wealth. He's a very wise man. And so some people are front and center in front of us all the time, but I think it's really important to not lose sight of those who still are able to maintain their integrity and core values important to humanity while still making money.
That's a good point. They're like Warren Buffett's such a good example, and maybe people like still look, a lot of he does have a lot of followers, like he does have a lot of people that really What are your thoughts? So it sounds like you work with a lot of women and men. Do you feel like men and women have a little bit of a different mindset when it comes to shopping, and or do you think nowadays, because of social media, it's pretty much the same, like very equal?
You know, I think men are catching up, Davidson, which isn't necessarily a good thing. You know, women for decades have been criticized, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right, for not being good enough. Your hair's not good enough. Your weight isn't good enough. So there's been that continuing pressure because women were objectified. So, you know, that's still ongoing. Malls were built in the 1950s, and malls were built in the US because women were still largely working in the home. And so it was a safe, efficient place for them to go to get a lot of shopping done. So shopping is something women will naturally identify with. Men, less so, but men who overshop will call themselves collectors. Like, I'm curating my closet of clothing or curating my audio technology, you know, so they refer to themselves as collectors more than shoppers. But, you know, I mean, men look great in clothing and like to buy clothing too, you know, so it's becoming more and more of an accepted phrase. But there are three things that all over shoppers have in common, whether, you know, they're male or female, and however you refer to yourself, right? And so the first one is that they almost always have fond memories of shopping when they were younger. So either it was special time with a parent, you know, maybe if you grew up in a bunch of kids, you didn't get personal time with mom and dad. So if you got to go with a parent shopping, you felt kind of special. Or it might have been, you know, on a birthday, you got to go out and you got, you know, something special, right? So there's almost always a good feeling of a past memory, so that shopping makes you feel good. And then, of course, you know, on top of that, shopping gives you a dopamine hit, so it's like getting high. The second thing is that people quite often start shopping by managing an emotion. So it might just be to start with boredom, or, hey, you know, I deserve a reward. I had a really lousy day and I'm just, you know, going to cool off and go get something for myself. So they start, and what happens is that they use shopping to manage one emotion, but then they use shopping to manage another emotion. And so it becomes an addictive habit. And you know, Charles Duhigg, who wrote a book on habits, said, you know, a good habit, you only have to do it once, because that if it rewards you enough, you'll just keep doing it. And of course, shopping gives you that dopamine hit. So it starts with managing emotions and continues as somebody suppresses more and more. And the third thing somebody has in common, whether they're male or female, is that they are trying to fill. And you can look at all your neighbors, they are trying to fill a core need they are not getting. Love and affection, self-esteem, esteem from others, need to belong, things like that. And so you can get those things in other ways other than material items.
A lot to unpack there. I definitely think you're right, right? Like, I feel like, I'm not gonna lie, like one of the reasons why I was so happy, like, oh, I'm moving up the corporate world, I'm becoming more successful. But I wouldn't necessarily say my happiness grew, right? It just, I would say it stayed about the same. I think the only times my happiness did grow was when I had like self-acceptance, right? I'm like, oh, I accept that I'm always going to be this like hyper guy who's like has a lot of energy, or you know, like I took the time to do things I like going to CrossFit, right? But it wasn't, you know, when I bought, you know, when I got like new material things, like it lasted for like an hour, right? But then it was kind of just, you know, you get used to it, you know? Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I think many of us, what are your thoughts on people's love language where their number one is gifts of was it called gifts of appreciation or something like that?
So it's learned, right? And gifts of appreciation do not have to be material items.
Oh,
You can
okay.
give of yourself. Or you can make something that, you know, like if you like woodworking and you want to make something beautiful, the time and hours and love and care that goes into something like that is so much greater than a material item, right? And so, you know, if you're a gift giver, but you're shopping all the time, you know, and gift givers are usually go beyond their partner. They will buy lunch for their assistant every day to buy love and affection. They will give things to their friends all the time, you know. So it's an underlying urge that's much deeper. But yeah, gifts do not have to be purchased because material items do not magically transform us into someone who loves their partner better. You know, it's they're false promises. Material items do not magically transform us into anyone, not into the person we want to be, not into a better partner, not into a better boss, you know, if we think we're just buying stuff for someone. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean I conceptually I get that, but I think in our society it's very counterintuitive to like what, you know, like there's so much advertising with diamonds and you know what I mean, like Tiffany's, Cartier, and like it's just it almost like there's so much conditioning that our society does that it's really hard for people to get that,
Yep.
I
It's
think.
oh, it's really hard. I mean, I'm sitting here. Don't assume that I do not also feel social pressure sometimes, right?
Right.
Like anyone who is surrounded by it feels it. It's the ability to resist. And I
Yeah.
ask you, like if you go back and research, who started the idea that an engagement ring had to be a diamond? Who do you think, right? One
Yeah,
of the big
exactly.
brands.
Yeah.
So it wasn't it it was it was it's like teeth whitening. 2 decades ago, there was no such thing as sorry, I won't say no such. There were not products on the shelf for teeth whitening.
Yeah.
But oh, if you're a toothpaste company and you're not making any more money because people only buy toothpaste so often, okay, what else could we sell to make more money? Oh, let's make people feel bad if their teeth aren't white.
Right.
And so teeth whitening didn't come from dentists. Teeth whitening came from packaged goods companies. Thank you very much, guys. So this is where I want you to be cynical. And I'm not saying we can withstand it all, right? It's really tough,
Yeah.
but if we start to push back and just love people for who they are and be curious and respect them and get to know them. Does it really matter how white their teeth are? Does it really matter if they have a Chanel bag on their arm, or are they just such wonderful listeners that they make you feel special?
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I see, like, I think it's crazy. I think I read somewhere in Korea where like the most common like 18th birthday present is like plastic surgery, right? That's like,
Wow.
yeah, it's just crazy. I think, yeah, it's like there's just some crazy stats, like 67% of like Korean, I think both men and women, but more on the women's side, have had plastic surgery. It's like a really crazy amount. But it's sad to hear, right? Like that's the society that we live in now, you
So
know?
sad. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Carrie, we can talk for hours, I'm sure, but I really appreciate like your insights and just the wonderful, beautiful work that you do. What's the best, what is, are some of the best ways someone could reach out to you?
Yeah, so my website is behavioral sense, as in CENTS money.com, behavioralsense.com. And my number is 914-923-6081. I'm available. You can go to my website, check it out. I cover not only financial coaching, but also over shopping, lots of programs there, lots of information for you guys. And I'd love to just hear from you.
Amazing. And would you be open to doing like a Q&A session sometime? Like maybe I can get like a bunch of friends and, you know, because I do
Yes.
have friends, I think that would be very curious to pick your brain in these matters and topics.
And I would be happy to do that. And it may give them some food for thought, and it may challenge them in uncomfortable ways. So give them that warning. But I'm happy to spread the word, because if we could all just relax and like each other the way we are without all our trappings, man, we'd be a lot happier country.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much, Carrie. It's been a pleasure to learn more and sort of like you said, I'm just thinking to myself, like, oh man, like is having buying the fourth house, is that really gonna make me happier? Right. And thinking like, you know, yeah, so it's just things that I think about from time to time. So thank you for creating that space and just the meaningful work that you do. And yeah, I'll coordinate with you some dates and I'll see who else is interested and I'll get back to you to coordinate calendars.
And thank you for having me and allowing me to share my passion. As you can tell, I get pretty excited about it. So thank you for your time.
Yes, yeah, it's one, you know, one person at a time, and I'm sure a lot of people would get a lot of value. And I'll link your website and your phone number. Sounds like you're open to sharing it in the call.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Carrie. Take
Thank
care.
you. Bye-bye.